Stuttgart, das Tor ist leer. Alles oder nichts. Das komplette Fleisch ist aus dem Grill, auf dem Grill die Ecke kommt. Und er ist drin! Und er ist drin! Der absolute Wahnsinn! Der VfB Stuttgart bleibt in der ersten Fußball-Bundesliga. Schiebt sich vor.
Doesn't feel like there's a whole lot to go over.
I know, right? Welcome to VfB Stuttgart Americana, an American-based English-language VfB Stuttgart fan podcast where reviews are unofficial, uninformed, usually unprepared. And I don't even know if I'm going to edit that part out, Matt. There's, I don't know exactly what we should talk about for episode 107. What do you think? Should we just end it here?
The game was boring. Some things happened with a banner. We lost.
I know we're going to spend most of this episode talking about a banner. So there you go. Let's do some shout outs really quick. There's not a lot going on. I was really shocked by this one. VfB Bingo. We haven't had anybody score a bingo. And if it was ever going to happen, it was going to happen this match because poor Kevin Hatcher, he had to talk for longer than the usual 90 minutes. It was almost 2 hours and 15 minutes this poor guy had to talk. He did a great job during some just strange moments we'll get into later. He only got 9 out of 25, though. I mean, I'm shocked. Well, he didn't hit up more of these just cliches.
I am too, but also hat tip to Kevin Hatcher for bringing fresh stuff and not falling back on old tropes and just spitting out the usual nonsense. He was remarkably composed and steady through the whole 7 hour long halftime. Did a phenomenal job. He doesn't listen to this, but well done, Kevin Hatchard.
Yeah, I sent him out something on the Twitter machine and said his voice has got to be gone, and he was like, yes, it's done. This point. Pod predictions, I am terrible. I went 3-6. You guys all went 4-5 in this one. Former VfB Bears out there, we're going to change it up this year. We're going to stop talking about the guys who are no longer officially with the club. But we did have a battle between Sasha Kalajic, old friend, and Luca Pfeiffer, who's still technically on loan, even though nobody really wants a poor guy. That's over 13 feet of just soccer player there, Matt. If it was a head-to-head battle royale, who are you taking?
If it's a battle, like a physical fisticuffs altercation,
yeah,
I think I'm going to take Pfeiffer. I think he's just a little thicker. If the two of them were both power forwards in the NBA, which gentlemen of their height should probably be, I think Pfeiffer would have the advantage because he could push Kalajic around a little bit.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. Yeah, I'd probably take Luka there too. He's looks a little stockier. Might be the only thing I'd take Luka in, unfortunately.
Absolutely.
Poor guy. As we record this, Gladbach is playing against Augsburg, so we haven't wrapped up the fantasy or the tip spiel, so we'll have to update those later. The OFC man of the match, boy, Matt, the OFC said it was Chris, and Baldy was in second place, but we had votes for the bird that was on the screen for a large portion of time, as well as the banner. I voted for Chris in this one. I thought he was causing some chaos, a word you like to use. What about you?
I think Furich was the most positive player on our team and was doing the most to create some offense. But I'm firmly team bird on this. Our feathery overlord was protecting us from complete and utter boredom through long stretches of that interminable halftime break. Mm-hmm. So yeah, go bird.
Yeah, we needed a streaker. We needed something to
happen. Yes.
During this match here. So let's jump into part two. Let's jump into the match. It was 14th place, hosting third place. You were pretty confident last week. I was a little bit more hesitant. I picked a draw. Bochum at home is just, they're tough. They've only got one loss now at home after this win. Did you change any of that confidence going into the match, or were you still feeling pretty good?
So I did no looking into this before the game. So I stayed very on brand with not being prepared. Neglected to check on what Bochum's home record was, really how they've been doing more than just looking at the table real quick. I thought this would be a walk. But Bochum's unique home environment, as the Ultras learned, contributes to some of their success, apparently. And we didn't play good. But I felt fine going into it. I was like, it's a 13th place team. We're going to go in. It'll probably be 2-1. It'll be less comfortable than we'd want it to be. But I'm not worried about it.
No,
I was wrong.
Yeah, I was getting more confident as the week went on because I found out that Asano wasn't going to play, that Kevin Stöger was sick. He wasn't going to play. And those are two of their better players. So I thought they're missing some of their key components. We can get a result out of this. So I was, like you, severely disappointed in that. I like the lineup going into this one, though. I mean, so Joshua dropped back to his usual right back position, and Leveling took his place. So Stenzel, who just got his contract extension, was benched for this one, although he'll play a role later. Any surprises there? Or I was pretty happy with the 4-2-3-1 that we rolled out.
Yeah, the lineup was pretty much what I expected. No issues going into the game. I was happy to see Fogneman back at right back, Leveling getting a chance in the start elf. I was pretty content with things.
Yeah, yeah. So let's get into the game. And so like last week, we're going to try and do it through a frame of a theme here. And the frame now is going to be the letter B, brought to you by Count Dracula, I guess. Or Chocula? Which one is it? Count? The Count?
I think it's just the Count on Sesame Street, right?
This episode is just going bangers right now.
Brought to you by Big Bird, since we're doing bees.
Oh, this is bad podcasting. What this is. All right, so go with the theme of B. We'll save Bannergate for later, but the first letter I've got is B for boring. This first half was just like, bleh. I don't know if it was the way Bochum was playing from the just in the back. We dominated possession again. The ref was calling everything. So there was no momentum. There was no rhythm, a lot of stop-start. I think there was like 4 yellow cards in the first half. It was just a yawn fest. Somebody put out on Twitter a meme of Fabian Vogelmuth yawning. And I was like, yes, that's what this is. So the question I have for you is, are teams starting to figure us out? Because I think they are. This is the second week in a row where we've seen teams just kind of let us have all the possession, sit in the back and they try to counter us. I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing, you know, because if we had some finishes and some chances converted, we'd be okay. But I think the word is out on us, and the book is out.
I think teams are trying to see if we can score on them without Jirasi. And right now the answer is no. So the easy way to play Stuttgart is to park the bus and try and hit us on the counter, because we get over aggressive. Karazor and Stiller were coming up a little bit more than they probably should have. And Anton and Zagadou are not the fastest gentlemen on the pitch. And so we got punished on the counter a couple times, and really probably could have gotten more than one goal against us because they had some pretty good counter attacks.
Yeah, that was the next thing I want to talk about, was bad chances. So we missed everything. I mean, Dennis had chances the 5th minute, 10th minute, right before the break. Anton had chance. There was just agonizingly close. These things just skirting across the goal. The XG was completely in our favor. Like you said, it's not a mystery that we're missing Seyru for this one. Everybody's form just seems to be taking a bit of a dump right now. And this is becoming a theme. And I don't know if we want to talk about the bad chances, or there was only one substitution in this match. And it was Roberto Massimo, of all people, who I didn't even know was still on the team. I thought he was in Portugal. And a lot of people are like, wait, why didn't we put in Milosevic? He's a striker. Yeah, he's 18. Honus sort of answered that today, where he said, listen, the reason I put Daxo up there was, yo, he's physically stronger than an 18-year-old right now. I don't know. The kid's on the bench. He looked good in that friendly against Spurt. Put him in.
Yeah, I don't really get not giving him a chance. I guess maybe he thought the moment was a little too big. You want to be careful not to crush a kid's confidence. And with the way that Bochum was stacking bricks in front of the net, opportunities were not coming real quickly in the last 20 minutes or so, which I think is when you would have put Milosevic in. But I was thinking this during the game, like, we got to make a substitution. But then I looked at the guys we had on the bench. And okay, maybe Milosevic, but maybe not. Who else do you bring in? Like Raymond? Okay, maybe. Sturgio? I don't know. We don't have any firepower on the bench right now because Silas, Zhang, Ito, Gerassi, all out on international duty. So there's the rest of our team.
Yeah, I didn't anticipate the depth issue being such a big factor in what's happened in January. I think we all knew we're going to miss Seiru, but let's talk about that for a second, though. Is I did see some commentary about some people who were disappointed in Honus for not making more than one sub. And the idea is, listen, we've got 34 points or so. We're clearly safe. And if we're not going to play the kids now, when are we going to play them? I thought that was a very interesting point, because you're right. The bench was stocked with just kids. So this is what we've always wanted, a carefree season where we can kind of plan for the future. It seemed like that would have been a good opportunity to put some of those kids in there and just see what they can do.
Yeah, I got a feeling Honus was really hoping to get a result out of this one, especially since we've got Leipzig next week. So he was probably trying a little too hard to get that result and not enough of a, hey, let's put these guys on and see what happens. This, you could have called this a lost game about 45 minutes into it and just said, we're going to roll the dice and see what happens. I can understand why Honus didn't want to do that. In hindsight, I kind of wish he had, because if we're going to lose anyway, we might as well let these guys get some experience on the pitch. And better against Bochum than against Leipzig, where mistakes will be more thoroughly punished. But I don't know. I'm back to, yeah, make some subs, but who?
I thought it was interesting that he didn't make any subs, but part of me was like, well, they had the hour-long break. So maybe these guys weren't as gassed and they didn't need to come out around the 70th minute or the 80th minute like usual. So that's kind of where my head was at in this match a little bit. It was nice to see Daxo back up front like Kaminsky was years ago playing striker. I thought he actually did pretty well, all things considered. I was going to rip that move more, but his ball control was actually pretty good. He had a couple nice headers over to some of the other guys. Just nothing was able to go through. Let's talk about another B, bad play. So the big bummer was that, oh, a B, is Angelo Siller, who's just been solid all year long, had the mistake that led to, you know, poor Daxo's lack of pace. He's not going to be able to finish that, catch up with that guy. So Bochum gets the goal. It's just, you said it last week. I think you said it again this week. We're just in a slump. The play is just bad right now. I mean, we can analyze it all we want, but we were in a huge run of form at the beginning of the season. That's leveled off a little bit in January.
Yeah, and it feels like there's a lot of guys trying to be the guy getting the assist, and nobody's trying to be the guy getting the goal. And I don't know if this is a mentality from having Gerassi being red hot and everybody's now not sure who to pass it to since he's not there. I don't know. My hope was that we would have a united effort of the guys all stepping up and saying, I'm going to take a little bit, I'm going to take a little bit, and collectively we would make up for his gap. But it seems to be a mentality issue where everyone's waiting for somebody else to be Seiru, and nobody's going to be Seiru. So we need Undav to be Undav, we need Furich to be Furich, and we just need these guys to go out there and do what they can do collectively. And I feel like we can have some success, but we've got to stop ball watching and play watching and hoping somebody else delivers a miracle.
I think they need to be a little bit more selfish. It's just, we said it last week, it's just, you've got the ball, Chris, kick the ball. You've got the ball, Des, do your thing. I agree with you. I think, yeah, they're waiting for somebody to show up and be a superhero. These guys can do it on their own. Let's talk about something that couldn't happen on its own. This is the big reason anybody's listening to this podcast this week. It's Bannergate 2020. I sent out more tweets for this particular issue than I've ever sent out for any watch along or anything like that. It got to be humorous at some point. Poor Kevin Hatcher, like we mentioned earlier, that poor guy had to talk and talk and talk. I'm going to let you kind of explain what happened here a little bit, because you were on the Discord, our OFC Discord channel, and it got, for the first time, I think since it's been created, it got a little spicy on there with the different takes
it
on
did.
What was going on. So break it down.
So I was I was glad to see after the game, I got on Twitter and was looking at it. I was glad to see you were carrying the water over there, because I was bouncing between the OFC Discord and the subreddit Discord to see what was going on. And Slevin, who runs the subreddit Discord, was giving us a pretty good breakdown over there. And the general idea, the commando can shatter curve banner that they always put up at the front of the away section, was preventing a door from being able to open freely that led to an emergency exit. So reportedly before the match, event officials came and said, hey, you've got to make an adjustment. They made an adjustment, and then they wanted to put up a protest banner. And they said, we're just going to put this up for 15 minutes and then we'll move it. So the event people said, fine. And they let the game go on. Then at the half, they said, well, we're still worried about your Conchat or curve banner. So you've got to move that, and you have to move it before play starts. And that's where everybody got real stubborn and said, no. I understand the concern that they want the emergency exits freely available. I don't understand what was different between the first half and the second that they had to completely halt play. The sentiment from the Germans in the Reddit Discord was that there's a long history of fan culture with these banners, that the banner is the identity for the club. It's more than just a piece of cloth hanging over the fence, that there's a lot of communication that goes in ahead of time around who's allowed to do what and where, and that these are all longstanding traditions, and that groups like our ultras are concerned that a request to remove a banner will become a, you're not allowed to have your banner, will become a bigger thing. And there was a period of time apparently where banners weren't allowed, and what you were allowed to do in the away block was tightly restricted. And so people have fought for the ability to do this, and they're hanging on tightly for the right to continue doing it. From an outside point of view, as an American fan sitting on my couch here in Michigan, it's like, move the damn banner and let's play soccer. Like, come on. But apparently this is a real big, like, it's our right to do this, and you can't tell us no. And also, I'm kind of with the guys of, it wasn't a problem for the first half of the game. Why is it a problem now? And even you saw the fire marshals come out and look, and the guys in the away section just pulled the banner up and the door opened right up.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I don't get why it was such a big issue. I'm still grateful for the shots of the pigeon that kept us going through that. Remain impressed by Hatchard. But the whole thing just, it just seems kind of dumb. But I get both sides of the argument. And that's what was going on in the OFC Discord, is we had a couple people saying, you know, this is the fan group's right, and they should stick up for themselves. We had a couple people saying, this is stupid, it's delaying the game, like, they're hurting the team. And one point was made of, the team would sacrifice the win in order to maintain that level of fan culture. And I don't think that's necessarily wrong. And part of what we love about the Bundesliga is the fan culture,
right?
And this identity of the league. So saying, you know, flush it because we had to sit for 45 minutes and wait for the second half to start feels like an overreaction. Ultimately, I think Bochum Stadium people suck for having not fixed this in the first place. Like, this hasn't, we're not the only team this has happened to. This isn't the first time this has happened to us. This is a systemic issue with that stadium. Neither sort your stadium so that the away block can do what the away block does, or come up with something so that they know you can't block this little section. Here's an alternative way for you to be able to display your banner. Like, get it together, Bochum.
You sound a lot like David, who's been on the show quite a few times, sent in, quote, as someone who has worked in and around venues my entire adult life, the goings on yesterday really struck a nerve with me. The venue was completely at fault, no question about it. Regardless of whether the club issued guidelines to the traveling fans, a banner issue should have been addressed by the venue the moment someone started to hang it. Not at the start of the game, definitely not at halftime. Ridiculously bad look for the venue management and security. The Bochum team, they sent out a tweet kind of explaining their side of it. They firmly blame the traveling supporters. Stuttgart sent out a tweet explaining their side of it, and they supported the traveling supporters. So it's like, I guess this is where rivalries are made and derbies and all that stuff. But it was just, it was so bizarre because it's something really small. And yet, it's one of the reasons we love the Bundesliga is because the fan culture is such a big deal. It was really weird when this game started. There was a 12-minute protest by the traveling supporters, and they weren't going to cheer for the first 12 minutes because of what's going on with the investor situation in German football. And I never really felt that they got into it like we're used to hearing them get into it. Like after that 12 minutes, I expected them to erupt, and I was waiting for that, and it didn't happen. I don't know if maybe because the sign thing was, you know, an issue, and that's where their concerns were. But it's just kind of wild that something that seems so small and insignificant, like I thought Rob said something really well in the Discord, is that, you know, as Americans, we're so used to the authority telling us what to do, and we're like, yes, sir. And no signs, whatever. I joke, when Jeff and I went over to the Stuttgart-Hamburg match in 2018, he got patted down three times because he just looked different. But during that game, when Hamburg scored, they lit off flares in the away section. So you talk about the traditions and things that maybe as Americans are like, what's going on? But it was interesting how it made our Discord channel, which is usually pretty tame. I mean, it's, I don't know if we've ever had an argument in there, get all fired up. It got fired up on Twitter. I wasn't looking at the Reddit aspect of it. It's nuts how something that seems like not a big deal was a huge deal.
Yeah, and I think what got a little spicy in our Discord was the claim that different people didn't understand because they hadn't been on the ground supporters necessarily. And so I think, first of all, it was generally handled pretty well. People were mostly respectful. It wasn't a big deal, and I appreciate that about our community. Did have a little bit of concern about some like gatekeeping type stuff of, you know, you're not a real fan because, but that went away pretty swift. So just, I'm glad that we were able to have those discussions. I feel like it's important that everybody gets to fan the way that they want to fan and support the way that they want to and can support. But it was definitely interesting topic of conversation and the most interesting thing that happened through the entire game.
I know. It was like you were my grandma at Thanksgiving trying to tell everybody to stop talking about religion or politics during the Discord. I was like, hey, there's a game going on. People were pretty fired up about it. So that's Bannergate, basically. So it was definitely odd. It was definitely a big talking point. Let's talk about the impact it had, because a lot of people asked, what kind of impact do you think it had on the match? The only thing that I might say is that in our last few losses, we've made early mistakes against Bayern, Gladbach, and Bochum. It was almost like it was a second match that started, is kind of how I looked at it. And so we had another early mistake that led to an opportunity for the other guys. So maybe it had an impact on it. I don't know. What about you?
The only thing it would maybe impact would be focus. And if the guys get a little distracted, then, you know, that's not great. And we do have a very young team, so they're more likely to succumb to that kind of stuff than a more senior team. And that seemed to be what happened that led to the goal, is just guys weren't totally locked in on the play. But we've, as you just said, we've seen that in the first half of a lot of games this year. And that shouldn't be too much to ask for professional footballers to be ready to play when the whistle blows to start a half of football.
Yeah. Before we leave Bannergate, I do want to, thank the heroes, Pascal Stenzel, Christian Gettner, for getting involved and going over there and talking. And we joked about when they hired Christian Gettner, nobody knows what his job is. And to this day, nobody knows what his job is. It still hasn't been defined. I think we figured it out. His job is to go over and ask people to remove their posters, and their job is to refuse him. And then he asks somebody else to come over, like Valdi Anton, and to do it. So I saw some of the people that I saw in Austin, Texas there trying to deal with the fans and supporters there. So I don't know. It's it was a rough match, bad game, bad loss. We got 45 extra minutes of watching. I don't even know how to end this segment. I mean, final thoughts on the banner. Will you always remember where you were when this day happened?
I will never forget my struggle to maintain attention on the game and not just fall down a social media rabbit hole of something completely different, because it was mind-numbingly boring. and felt kind of stupid at the time. But to kind of wrap up the game as a whole, the officiating was bad both ways, not just against us. It was just a poorly officiated game, which sucked. We didn't play good, which sucked. I don't think Bochum played particularly well, which sucked. The banner thing happened, which sucked. And then we lost. So the whole thing just kind of sucked.
Yeah, that sums it up pretty well. So why don't we get in the final thoughts? We're still in third place, though. So Bayer Leverkusen got the win over Leipzig, who we unfortunately have to face next weekend. Bayer Munich just lost today, Sunday, to Werder Bremen in a big one. They used to call it the Der Klassiker, too. I didn't know there was multiple Der Klassikers. I'm guessing if there's multiple ones, there probably really isn't one. But Bremen got that one, so we're still in third place. I kind of want to wrap this segment up here, though, Matt. We put on Twitter a poll as to where do you think Stuttgart's going to end their season after match day 34. We got about 70 or 80 votes on this one, and it was about 67 to 33%. 67% said that it was going to be somewhere between 5 through 7. And we joked, well, it's a good thing we put this poll out before the Bochum game and not after it. I'm pretty firmly in that 5 to 7 camp. I feel it's going to be the usual cast of characters. It's going to be Leverkusen. It's going to be Munich. It's going to be Leipzig. And Dortmund's going to Dortmund. They're going to end up in the top four. So then you're looking at us. You're looking at, I think it's Frankfurt. You're looking at Freiburg. You're looking at Hoffenheim in that group. And I think one of those, three of those four, I guess, are going to finish somewhere in that 5 through 7 spot. I think 1 through 4 is, I think we're going to take a couple lumps through January and February until those guys get back from Africa and Asia.
My initial reaction was we're 1 through 3. We're going to weather this. It's going to be fine. After watching the Bochum match, though, I'm less confident in how well we can adjust to the roster changes we have to make due to the Asia Cup and Africa Cup. And that's a reality. We don't have a deep enough team right now to weather the losses that we're taking because of those guys being on international duty. And like, I'm glad they're on international duty. I'm glad we have players of that caliber. I'm glad that those guys are getting to go and represent their country. That's a huge deal for all of them. But as a Stuttgart focused person, like, it makes me a little sad.
You mentioned international play. Why don't we dive into part three, some news, headlines, and questions? Cause one of our guys just scored a goal today.
Let's go.
All right, so we got international play. You mentioned all of them there. Hiroki Wu, Endo scored a goal for Japan in their loss the other day. Silas scored today, Sunday, to get a draw in his match. So it's looking like Congo and Guinea are looking good to advance, which is great for them, but as you mentioned, is bad for Stuttgart. So Seiru hasn't played yet, but he was on the bench for the last one. Then we have some contract extensions or lack thereof. So the kid deal, who we thought was going to come over from Cologne, is not signed yet. Turns out that a lot of clubs want to get him. And Pascal Stenzel, he of Banner Negotiation, got a extension as well. Any of that news you want to comment on?
Silas also got the man of the match for his game, which was nice. It's good to see him have some success, and hopefully he'll keep rolling and bring that home for us. Good to see Seiru on the bench. The Stenzel contract thing was kind of interesting. I saw it and I went, meh. Like, I was somewhere between indifferent and disappointed because I would like to see somebody younger, I guess, and with more promise. But at the same time, we don't have a whole lot of veteran voices in that locker room. So a guy like Stenzel, especially if he knows his role is as a backup and his role is as a mentor, there's a lot of value in that. And who knows what would have happened with the banner without his negotiating prowess. So I'm fine with this Stenzel thing. I'm not excited about it, but it's fine.
Yeah, it's definitely a Fabian Bredlow type signing. It's a depth guy. Yeah. I do understand the argument that he's pretty one-dimensional. You know, he's not like a super flexible guy, but it certainly seems like he's got the ear of Honus and that he's sort of a coach on the pitch, on the bench, and sounds like from everything we've heard, he's a really good locker room guy too. So those, not a lot of news there. Questions. We got Doug. Doug said that he let his 2-year-old pick the man of the match for him this week. So he thought about Anton because he had a couple good opportunities, but still not worthy of man of the match. At what point, Ted asked, do we start Daxo as striker while Seiru is away, or do we play Nubel up there? Because they told the story about how he used to be a striker in his youth days. Also, having Karazor missing for the accumulation of yellow cards terrifies me against a team that can counter like Leipzig. How do you think Honus is going to change up the lineup there? So, Ted and Doug, thanks for those questions. So, we got two questions here. I get the lack of depth. There were some people who were saying that Honus not playing any of the kids was an indictment against Fabian Vollgemut for not stocking the roster. I don't buy that argument. I think it was more of he thought those guys were playing well. I think it's what you said is those kids might not have been ready for the moment. The long break, I think, meant those guys could go a little bit longer. But what do you think? Who's going to score goals for us while Seiru's gone? Because we've only got one in the last two matches.
Yeah, I'm starting to get more and more worried about it. I still believe in Undav. He had a lot of good chances there, and he's real close to burying one. I'm a little concerned with how Enzo Mio is playing right now. I'd like to see more out of him, and he's just kind of getting swallowed up in that central midfield role. I don't know if we need to move him out to a wing or something. But Karazor missing for the next game is really concerning. Do you know, can Rouault play defensive mid, or is he strictly a center back?
I thought he was mostly a center back. Maybe, what is it, center back, and sometimes he plays, what is it, on the right side? I think we're going to see, to answer Ted's second question there, I think we're going to see Enzo kind of move back a little bit. Maybe he's going to play next to Angelo. Who else do we have? That's one of the questions people had as the season started, is that those number six positions that Angelo and Ada play, those are the only guys that really play those positions. And yeah, so there was a hit there. There wasn't anybody to replace them. So I bet we're either going to see Enzo move back, or we're going to see a different formation, maybe a 4-4-2 instead of the 4-2-3-1 we've been playing.
I wouldn't mind seeing Enzo move back and just see if that kind of change of position impacts his output at all. Maybe that unlocks something for him, and give one of the younger guys a shot up front. Just tell him to go run your legs off. Say, I'm going to give you a half, go as hard as you can. And at the half, we're going to give somebody else the second half, unless you're playing totally lights out. So let's, you know, go and see what happens.
I am Rob Holloway asks, states, we started well, had a lot of chances, but I think that crap with the banner made the break too long. How would the second half have gone without the banner incident? I was just happy that nobody pulled a muscle. That was actually my biggest concern, is that these guys are getting their same usual warm-up and routine. And if we can just come out of this healthy. So we sort of already answered that. Any last thoughts on if the banner impacted the game, Matt? Because I don't want to go a sentence without talking about the banner.
Mentality is it, and I'm with you. Nobody got hurt, so meh.
Yeah. All right, here we go. The team looks capable without Seiru, but very flat and listless. Chris is trying to provide the spark, but he can't seem to make the final pass. He's frustrating to see the ball just fall short of the bar. They appear like they should be on the task these last two games, but fall short in key moments to make the final pass. They're not finishing their chances. Shimmy Fan sends in, shaking my head. We need somebody to step up. You know, how does one player make that big of a difference? We haven't shown a lot of urgency here. He says, and Josh, you know, I really hope they do well in Africa, but I really hope they're back soon. So I don't know if we can have both of those. This is getting back to a theme I kind of wanted to avoid. We had a lot of questions, so thanks from Josh and Tim. The no Seiru, no fun theme. I didn't want that to be the common denominator, because I would like to think that Dennis or somebody can step up, but is it as simple as that? We're missing this one key guy, and until he gets back, it's Bruno like time.
It seems like he was more of an emotional center for this team than we realized, and it was kind of an avatar that guys were putting themselves into. So somebody else is going to need to start doing that. And whatever that is, just fireballs at the net every chance you get. I don't know what the answer is, but somebody's got to step up and say, it's going to be me. I got this. I got you guys. Let's go. And the team clearly needs a talisman of sorts. And without Seiru, somebody else has to do it.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to the letter B. Just bad luck. I mean, we had plenty of chances. The ball was just not going to go in that day. And you know what? It's going to take some time to work through it. So I think we'll get there. Last question. A good friend Flabby sends in his usual inappropriate question. Phil Forrester, sans porn stash, looks like Bill Hader's stupid inbred cousin. Do you remember Bill Hader from Saturday Night Live? You'll understand that one. I like Bill Hader, though. I'm sure I would like his cousin. I mean, I don't like my own cousins. Do you?
I like Cousin Eddie from Christmas Vacation.
There you go, Flabby. We solved that problem. Okay, last section for this just amazing episode that we've had so far today. During the interlude, actually, by the way, I do want to share this. I was attacked by a giant Valapee crest that fell off my bookshelf. So I may not remember most of whatever we're about to talk about, which is probably good because we have to play against Leipzig, who is in fourth place behind us. Ha ha, take that. At home, no Ana Karazor. When I say Leipzig to you, Matt, what goes through your mind?
I dislike Red Bull for so many reasons. I'm an F1 fan, and the Red Bull team in F1 bothers me. Max Verstappen is one of the least likable people in all of motorsport, from what I can tell. I hate the way that they just game the system to get a team into the Bundesliga. I don't like that they've got teams in Austria and the US, and they just kind of trade players amongst them to maximize profit for themselves. It just, every piece of this feels scuzzy and gross, and I hate it, and it makes me upset. The only thing I like about Red Bull is when they do those videos where the people make the big ridiculous go-karts and they run them down hills through obstacle courses. That's hilarious. So
all right.
Tip of the cap to Red Bull for that one. Everything else, boo.
I'll make sure to save that entire monologue you had there when I talked to the RBL podcast guy next weekend. So he invited us on his show. So I don't even know if we'll do a podcast. Maybe we'll take next weekend off and have people listen to him.
Well, it depends on how well we do.
I know.
If the game goes great, we might need to.
That's true. I do feel bad for the guy because I think your summation of Leipzig is pretty much what everybody thinks of Leipzig. And this poor guy out in Australia is doing everything he can to get some love for his club. And the number of times he either has to block people or people block him, it's kind of sad. We're all in this Bundesliga family together, I guess. But
the one thing I will concede with Leipzig is they're one of the only East German teams in the Bundesliga. And East Germany was just significantly financially disadvantaged after World War II. And a lot of those areas haven't been able to recover. And so, like, if Red Bull had to do this, which they didn't, for the record, but if they had to, better they do it in a place like Leipzig, who's not getting significant investment, that would have had a really, really hard time doing this without something like that. So, like, I feel for Leipzig and for the Leipzig fans, just the way Red Bull does business makes me feel skeevy.
I'm reading a book called The Turning Season right now that talks about the East German teams, and it's exactly what you said. Outside of Leipzig, which he doesn't actually count because they weren't in the first division in 1988, disbanded. There's only, I believe, Union Berlin is the only team that's in the top division. And of the 18 or 19 teams that did exist, there's only two or three in the second division. I mean, it's like you said, that East Germany was decimated by this. So yeah, it's gonna be a tough one. When I think of Leipzig, it's the same thing you think of. I respect the way they play. I kind of like that they've got this system, whether it's in Austria, whether it's in the United States or Germany, they play this very attacking system. I kind of think that's kind of neat. I don't know what happened with Timo Werner and how that didn't work out. I thought he was just made for that club, and he's back in the Premier League, which blows my mind that you can't make it for Leipzig, but you can make it in the Premier League. But yeah, it's tough to like these guys. And especially, like you said, the way that they treat us, they don't treat us very nice. I don't even want to throw the stats out there. In the history of our matchup, I think we only have two draws, and I think we only scored like 4 goals against them. Any ideas to what the odds makers have this one at? We are at home, missing Ada, and pretty much our entire bench with those guys in Africa and Asia. What do you think?
we're at home with half of our team against a team that consistently curb stomps us, which, if we're being really honest, is probably most of why I don't like Leipzig. They just abuse us. I'd say they've got Red Bull by half a goal.
I was shocked that this one is a pick 'em right now. It's even.
No.
Even. So it's kind of like the NFL, where the home team usually gets 3 points in the NFL. So usually in Bundesliga, they give the home team half a goal. So I think Leipzig is probably favored in this one. I wouldn't be surprised if that spread shifts closer we get to the match. I am going to take Leipzig in a big win. I think we're in a rough spot right now, with missing guys, with runs of form. Leipzig is going to play a little bit angry because they just lost this weekend. I think it'll be like a 3-0, 2-0 type of thing. I think we're in a little bit of trouble.
I'd like to see if Leipzig gets on. I think Leipzig will win too, but I would like to see. I don't think Leipzig will park the bus as much as like Bochum did. So I'd like to see us cash in a couple chances. I could see this being a 3-1, 3-2, 4-2 victory for Leipzig, but it'd be good if we could get off this we can't score without Girassi kind of thing, and start to build a little bit of confidence. And it'd be nice to see some of the younger guys get a chance in a friendly environment at home. I know Leipzig's a really good team, and maybe you don't want to put that on the guys, but got to give them a chance sooner or later.
Yeah, and hopefully Leipzig doesn't bring any of their banners to our arena.
Yeah, we'll have to shut it down at halftime.
That's right. Like we're prone to do. Yeah, I think it's going to be a pretty big win for Leipzig. But, you know, I could be wrong here. I was looking up Honus's record when he was with Hoffenheim. The worst streak he had was in his second season. He had a couple three-match losing streaks, but always bounced back. And the worst run of form he had as a coach was the very end of his second season at Hoffenheim, 3 losses, 2 draws, and 3 losses to wrap up the season. They had European ambitions, and they missed out, so he was let go after that. So I got an idea he can right the ship. I just get the feeling that everybody's frustrated. Everybody's just, from the players to the coaching staff to the supporters, everybody's just frustrated right now. So maybe getting some home cooking, was exactly what the doctor ordered for this one.
Maybe a little maltosh, and it'll get the guys back on the right track.
Oh man. All right. Well, that is it for episode 107. If you have any more questions about banners, you can reach me at Hazelfish. You can reach Matt at Sail Racer. Anything else, Matt, as we wrap this one up?
I think just a reminder to everybody that we're in third place and we didn't expect to be here at the beginning of the season. And we're going to go through a stretch here that's going to be a little rough because we've got 4 of our best players out on international duty, and just take a deep breath. We'll be okay. We'll get through this.
I like that idea. I'm going to look at the table right now just to make myself feel a little better. Oh, wow. Augsburg's winning. How about that? But yeah, we third place. And I do want to kind of wrap this up too, is the idea of my Monopoly app came up for some reason. Why did that happen? If we go through the 5 through 7, right, we've got 34 points. Hoffenheim has 24. They're in eighth place. Okay. Freiburg's got 28. Frankfurt's got 28. Dortmund's got 33. Heidenheim is 22 and they're in ninth place. I mean, this still is shaping up to be a really fun season and mostly a carefree season for sure. Yeah. We're taking our lumps right now, but we all knew this was going to happen. But as supporters, we kind of, I don't know, put our heads in the clouds a little bit. And
we got high on our own supply. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with it. We were all enjoying it. I was leading the charge. But we're going to be fine. We've got a young team. We've got a lot of guys who are learning and growing and developing. We've had some good contract extensions. Hopefully we'll get a couple good signings at the end of the season. This is all going to be okay. We just need to take a deep breath and realize that there was never a world in which we were going to win 90% of our matches this year, even, and that's okay.
All right, everybody. Hopefully that deep breath helps you out. And next weekend, we'll come back at you after a big, surprising win against our best friends, Leipzig, at home. Matt, thanks for joining us this week. We'll talk to you next time, man.
Thanks, Travis.